Hello, Radioland. You are listening to 91.7 WHUS Stores. This is another episode of Darshiv. I'm your host, Graham Stinnett, and today we are continuing the 1974 Black Student Sit-In Program with this conversation that was held in the Schimmelfing Gallery at the Archives and Special Collections on March 21st with Dr. Gary King from Penn State University. He made a trip out to see the exhibition, Please Respond Personally, commemorating the 1974 Black Student Sit-In at Wilbur Cross Library that we curated and organized over the semester of 2024, spring, to try and coincide with that 50th anniversary that happened the week of April 22nd. And Gary was very generous with his time. He was extremely excited to see the exhibit and kind of recall and recount some of that history that he remembered and the faces that he saw in the exhibit to kind of flesh out some of the color that isn't really represented in the documents. So this is kind of this reason why we need to have the memory side of the historical document to help us understand the feel and the experiences that individuals had that isn't always right there on the page. So I hope you enjoy this sort of gallery walkthrough tour where I'm basically asking Gary questions and he's filling in some gaps with things that he sees with the material that we had on display. Thanks for listening and hope you enjoy the episode.
Whenever we had a demonstration, that picture there was taken right here. Okay. Yeah, that was facing the president's office. Yeah. And so we would always come here or in here in some way during that time, that time period.
And what do you think this painting means to you? Is this sort of representing that Ferguson is, he's having a hard time? Is that what that's getting at? Hang in there, Ferg?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was, some other, students. And there was a contingent of white students, reactionaries in many respects. And I'll give you the name of that group, Young for Freedom, something. And they probably exist. And there's one guy who used to write editorials there, and him and I used to go back and forth.
He would submit to the Daily Campus?
Yeah, okay. Submit to the Daily Campus. Regardless,
yeah,
anybody can write that. I mean, fine. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. But we would also, we wouldn't necessarily paint it, but we would stand there. And that's where that picture, iconic photo there was taken.
Right.
There. I mean, you could see that too, because he's looking down.
Mm-hmm.
And then looking down.
Sure.
And the Puerto Rican student movement was also a very important force during that time period.
Right.
And they got the Puerto Rican house.
Yeah.
No, that came later. And they got the Puerto Rican house, I think, in my second year or third year.
Okay.
There. And they were, they raised it, very important.
Right.
They were helpful.
Mm-hmm.
There. But so, and so that was one. So let me just go back here.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit here. Now some of these folks here, I do recognize Rodney. Oh, yes. She's from Waterbury. I went to high school with her out there. I don't recognize her. I do recognize him. I think he was a football player.
Hmm.
Yeah, there. He was a football player. Yeah, I do remember her as well. I'm not sure if there are any other pictures of other people.
A few here. I've kind of selected a few that were a little bit...
Yeah, well, if you have...
The whole thing has been digitized, and I can send you that link too if you wanted to see them all.
But yeah, I certainly would.
Okay,
I'd like to see me there.
Do you remember anything about the photographer? Do you remember that? Because from an archives perspective, I'm really interested. Do you know that person?
Extremely important.
this person here, right there. This is Gene Young. Okay, Gene was the graduate student. Him, I, and Nathalia Bracey, we were the most militant of the group. Okay. There, you know, Rodney was more or less, there.
OAAS.
OAAS, and everything. But we told Rodney, this is what we got to do. Now, we wrote the speeches. We did that. Gene was the inspiration. Gene was a very powerful orator there. And he was from Mississippi. Mm-hmm. And he had a long history of us, civil rights and, agitation and activism. And so, this is so very powerful. He's no longer with us up there, but he was a very, very important figure.
And is he, so was he arrested in...
Yeah, the library.
With the rest of y'all?
Yes.
Because there was a second protest.
No,
the next day.
The second protest was a little different.
Yeah.
The second protest, mostly white students and some Puerto Rican students as well participated in that. Right. But in faculty.
Yes.
There was a group of faculty as well. And that was very important, very supportive of what we were doing.
Right.
Yes, Gene.
Right. That's the letter writing campaign list.
Yeah. Yep. Now this is also important, and this is where Nathaniel Bracey comes in, because he was the editor of Contact.
Okay.
There, and that was our newspaper, and that was our way of communicating amongst ourselves, and demonstrating, and doing that.
Right. Which is, this is like the best record we have from that period.
Yes.
Voices.
He has
of you
others.
Guys. Okay.
That's amazing. I have that because I do recognize it.
Okay.
Let me see who.
And these are folks who are unhappy that they can't go into study the outside of the building. So,
yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. That's interesting. Most of us refused to walk out. Right. We wanted to be carried there. Yes, I remember. You remember that? Oh, yes. No, absolutely. And I was one of the last ones out of the building up there. And that was, wow. For that to, there's so much to it.
And it seemed like they had a plainclothes woman who was taking folks out too. There's a couple of them.
Yeah. But I don't know who she was up there. But this is it. This is so powerful.
Do you remember anything about the photographer? Because I am trying to unravel is this a university photographer or is this a police photographer? Like, they were clearly trying to get your guys' face. Like, this is a document for the university to possibly, expel or make the list of, like, who is it involved actually in this
thing?
Well,
There was a daily campus photographer there, and there was a student photographer, because we did let...
Inside?
Inside.
Okay.
No, as we're coming out. We did let some of them know, because when we were inside, we were calling newspapers there. We went in there at 10 o'clock, 10 o'clock in the morning, and they were saying, well, wow, why are these people coming in? We're getting ready to close.
Mm-hmm.
And it came, oh, the library is closed. We're not moving. Yeah, all 219. And we were in the east wing, I believe it was. I forgot what section that is there now.
But it's this reading room, basically.
The reading room.
Yep.
Yes, that's us. Yeah, well, that was the reading room. But they were right outside the reading room.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. They were right outside the reading room. And it was Governor Mescal. Who was he was the governor at that time. He gave the order to take them out, because they were trying to negotiate with us. Will you leave? Ferguson didn't want the police. They were trying to negotiate. No, we're not negotiating. We're not coming out of there. You're gonna have to come and get us.
Mm.
At one point they said, well, if you don't leave now, you're going to be arrested. We said nope. Now, some people left. Yeah, there, and I know who they are. And some of the basketball players. Rodney did not leave.
Right.
There, a couple of graduate students, left, and they went out windows. Uh-huh. But Rodney did not. Rodney did not leave. We wouldn't have let Rodney leave anyhow. But And yeah, these yes, but I don't recall the photographer's name.
Which is, I don't expect you to either.
Yeah, I don't recall, but the Daily Campus would probably have.
So this is the closest we've got from the Daily Campus. So we've got outside. This is Hartford Current. So someone was in. Like, this is you guys in here, and here are the police coming to make their announcement. I'm assuming.
Yes.
Who is this person taking this? I need to know who the photographer is. Like, this looks like they were embedded with you almost.
Yeah. Right.
So
they probably were because we called them.
Okay. Okay. This is New York Times, so...
That's the New York Times. I remember this one. Right, the New York Times. There. Yeah, I do remember this. Saying that, wow.
Mm-hmm. And so as far as the... I just wanted to talk out a little bit about the distinctions you guys made within your organizing tactics between, you know, as you described, sort of a more militant branch and then the OAAS branch. Did you guys have your own organization? Was the Black Student Union something that you guys had?
I'll explain that in a second. Let me just make sure. Dear President Ferguson, 1979. Now, and Gene was the one who composed a good deal of this there. And him and I set up in the morning and we did numerous... and I graduated that year with a degree of distinction. Mm. And yeah, they had the crisis in anthropology. Now, the anthropology department was interesting because this, you know, a good deal of this revolved around this. And they had some very conservative people there. And then, of course, the field of anthropology was changing. Mm-hmm. But there was one gentleman there. Ginsburg, yep. Who was very, very conservative, right wing, outspoken. You know, he said that we were being influenced by people in New York and we're taking those kind of orders and all that kind of stuff. And he was, into that, he would have fit right in with Trump, and maybe he still is. And then there was another fellow. But they also had a very important professor in anthropology who was in opposition to them. His last name was Pelto. Pelto.
Okay.
Yeah. And in fact, his wife was a, if I recall correctly, his wife was a state representative from Mansfield at one point. And I think his son also followed him. But he was very much on our side and very, very, very supportive one of the people who we felt very strongly about. But the anthropology department, was a very right wing, at that stage. So we were in opposition to much of what they were teaching. And that was also back there when doing the Jensen scientific racism ideology and. Things that were being spread at the time. Yeah. Now this was a whole different, whole different time period. There, I remember, when Nixon resigned, mm-hmm. of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. I remember, standing over there. Actually, we were celebrating on August 8th when he resigned. So there was the first demonstration was a silent march around campus. The second one was when we. Pass out the demands there, and to Ferguson as he came in. We wanted to surprise the administration. We wanted to do it in a way that let them know very clearly that we were in, what we were interested in, and how serious we were. So we did that at 7:30 in the morning. We wanted to do that before. We wanted to get there before the president arrived. So we planned this very meticulously, and we had a signal to let everybody know that we were going to get there. Now, that signal, what was that signal? Well, it was the radio station. Okay, there was a DJ by the name of Earl. I don't know Earl's last name. And he was on early that morning. Okay. And
WHUS?
Yes, okay. WHUS. He had to play, we told him to play a song at 7 o'clock, and this would let everybody know to be to come down and be ready for the demonstration at 7:30. And what was the song? The Big Payback by James Brown.
Hey! got to pay back. Revenge.
All right, okay, that was the song. And so that was our signal to come down and make sure, because we wanted to make sure that we got there before the president. There. And we had other information about when he usually arrives and so forth and so on.
And so you guys had your letters ready.
Yes.
And that's what these are. These are all of the facsimiles from the collection.
Yes, and each of us had the letters. We printed them up all night long. Each of us had the letter, and we handed them to him. We formed, it was a line of people that we, a parallel line, and as he came into Gully Hall, we each handed him that, and he, graciously, took each one of them and said, thank you, thank you, thank you. That was Glenn Ferguson. Yeah, that was Glenn Ferguson.
What is your, so you kind of straddled that period when you saw the end of Babbage's term as president, and then the beginning of Ferguson, which is when this all happened.
Yes.
How do you feel about that administrative transition? Did you have, real warm, fuzzy feelings about Babbage?
Yeah, everyone kind of loved Babbage, there. And Ferguson was a different character. And my understanding that Ferguson was a former ambassador, there, if I recall correctly. And he came, with those kind of credentials. And he had, big shoes to fill with regard to, Homer Babbage. So, we didn't know him. We didn't know how he would react. Okay. But there were also other people there too, the provost, Gant.
Ed Gant. That's it.
Yeah, Ed Gant. So and I served on a couple of committees. Gant was fairly conservative. But he was, the right hand man. And so we, had, and so, it was also the issue, the time of a strong affirmative action, there. And I remember serving on that committee, just being the student representative on that committee, and interacting with Gant. And it was clear that we weren't going to get very far with him. And so we all were collectively, thinking about this, how best to present, a list of demands to the university and to protest vividly our concerns. That was the second one. Then we said, no, we have to do something much more demonstrative. We need to show them that we're serious. We don't want to be destructive. When I want to do anything, that's going to backfire. I'm there, but we can have a sit-in. And so, Gene, myself, Nathaniel Bracey, a couple others, we were the ones that was pushing for this. And Gene was he was guiding us, he had a long history in the civil rights movement, coming up from Mississippi and having that kind of experience. And we were younger, and we were all good friends there.
What department was he a part of as a graduate student?
Education.
Do you remember? Education department.
Education. And then we had other kinds of demonstrations where we came and read demands before. We stood in front of Gully Hall there. Mm-hmm.
That's where that photo is.
Yes. Yeah, we stood in front of Gully Hall. I remember reading a speech, as well, during that time period.
Because this is from the yearbook direct, which is mostly either daily campus photographers or people who worked for the Nutmeg.
Unite Against Racism. Now when I graduated, and this is in the Hartford Courant. I saw it a few years ago. When I graduated, having a degree of distinction, I graduated. When I went up on stage, I held up a sign
Stop Racism. And that was very very important. Oh, yeah, I know. Okay, I see him now. Oh, man. Now, he too. That that's, well, what's his name here? That guy there with the... that's Dennis Morgan.
Here? The guy in the foreground?
Okay. No, not the foreground.
Oh, in the back there.
Yes, right there with that beret. Okay. That's Dennis Morgan. And Dennis was also very important as a radio host. And they kept us informed and kept us, allowed us to play and to announce, things on WHUS.
This is Ferguson, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm. And so he gave a town hall shortly after that second arrest.
No, and that town hall, I was there. I was leading that town hall. And I remember, and I know exactly where that town, where we had it at. It's in the auditorium of... one of those two buildings on the corner.
Monteith.
Okay. Yes. There's an auditorium there. And he bravely came, answered questions there, discussed with us. Wow. Yeah, I recall very clearly.
So did you get taken to Stafford Springs or to the police barracks?
Stafford Springs.
Okay. And what was that experience like?
Okay, now we got taken to Stafford Springs. We got taken to Stafford Springs on the same buses, the commuter buses that we, the student commuter buses. That's how they took us there.
Yeah.
Okay.
These, right?
Yes. Those commuter buses. They took us. They took us there, and so we were familiar with the buses on there. And and then we had people. It was it was early in the morning, but it went around campus, and then you had people out there supporting us. And then they brought us back.
On the buses?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, and then they brought us back. Interestingly enough, they never was able to determine the names of many of those folks there.
Okay. Yeah,
because we said we didn't have any IDs. We made sure we didn't have any IDs. Okay. The people who left out of the library, we said, take our IDs. Yeah, there. Mm-hmm. And so... the record will show that Ike and Tina Turner was there, got arrested. Mickey Mouse, he got arrested. Popeye might have gotten arrested, as well. So we had all these fictitious names. Yeah. Now Rodney was identified because he was on the basketball team.
Okay.
And a bus driver identified Rodney. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so how did you end up getting like a letter sent to your folks or to you? Like, how did they know that you were the one being charged with criminal trespass or what have you?
No letter, nothing, nothing, nothing punitive. I never saw a letter like that.
Okay.
Only thing, we knew that those charges were going to get dropped. It was just a matter of time.
You were confident of this?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Okay. University did not want, and that was one of the demands we made of him. We want all those charges dropped. Because he was embarrassed that he did not give the command to take over, to get him out of the library. That came from Hartford and Mesko.
From the governor.
Right, Governor Mesko, who was, a staunch Republican, Nixonian, during that time period. And so he had to take orders. He took orders from them and the board of trustees that he was dealing with. That was one of our demands, And so amnesty. No one would, we never went to court, never, those records were totally erased very quickly.
Right.
Yeah, and the university said they would not press charges.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, if they would have tried to press charges, that would have been, a major mistake.
Totally.
Seeing that, yeah, and then seeing the New York Times, doing it, that's it. And Graham, that's 50 years ago.
You got a great memory, man.
Oh, I could tell you some other things.
And it's just like, you hear something and then it unwinds the, this.
Yes. But you can see, we told them, take us.
Right.
And particularly the men, take us. No, we're not going. You're going to have to drag us out of here. And many women, we said, go ahead, just walk. Mm-hmm. But it was the state police that they called.
Right. like 90, like a really big force.
Contingent.
Yeah.
Yeah. The state police, there, and they were they did not do anything out of character. Mm-hmm. They picked you up, they may have said a couple of things, but it was nothing. They did their job.
Right, nothing extraneous.
Nothing extreme, nothing overtly racist or anything. I remember the guy saying, "Now, are we going to do this easy or the hard way?" I said, "We're just going to do it one way." they both, I only weighed 145 pounds.
Right.
So I wasn't, doing that.
Did you have much overlap with this other group, the coalition, the ones who are making the demands about anthropology, about the bookstore that was a big issue? Like there was a cooperative movement to try and get this fallout?
Yes. Now, this was very important too, because there was a group of white activists, students on mostly white activist students on campus. And they had a number of different groups. Some were more radical, more progressive, but they were usually quite supportive. There was one group called CAR, Coalition Against Racism.
Right.
Right there. In addition, there was an SDS faction, more radical socialist-oriented group, the Socialist American. I remember the gentleman. We had a number of conversations, a number of we asked them to support us, and there were things that we could agree on. Even before 74, when I came in 70, we're still talking about the war, and Nixon. And so it was still a whole lot, a whole lot going on. Mm-hmm. There was also, student organizations that was getting started in terms of the environment.
Earth Day was 1970.
Earth Day was big. Was it Nader, Ralph Nader?
Mm-hmm. Connecticut.
Yes, right. I remember he came on campus, those white student, progressive groups at that time. Were very supportive.
Mm-hmm. But you maybe just had individual meetings with some of the group leaders versus we're going to come together and have our demands be solidified.
Right,
it was more individualized.
Right. It was more representational. Now, one of the other things, too, is important to know. We do know there were people who were serving in the interests of the police, who tried to infiltrate, and we think there were one or two who actually did infiltrate the coordinating committee.
And coordinating, as in,
yes.
Okay, and yes. So there was a core group of y'all to just say we're coordinating.
We call ourselves the steering committee, and so and we know there at least one person to this day, I'm sure, was a plant. I remember. When we had the silent march, there were two students two individuals who I knew all of us, black students. There were two of them. I said, they were not from there. And I remember going up to both of them and saying, where are you from? Oh, I'm from UMass. I just came down. I said, no, we who are you with? I know somebody. Well, who do you know? And he was part of the march. I said, no, we can't have you in there if you're not part of the march. Then there was another person who was from there. We also knew, too, that we had some inside information from administrative sources that the police were trying to recruit black students to spy on what we were doing.
Wow.
Some suggestions that phones might have been tapped or something. So I don't put anything. We weren't engaged in any kind of radical.
Sure.
Extremist. Sort of activity.
Sure.
But we were very determined, and we believed very strongly in what we were doing, and most of us who participated were Connecticut natives. Most were from Hartford, New Haven, Bridgeport, Waterbury.
You're from Waterbury, yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh. And that's, you know, and so, you know, over the course of, you know, my time, you know, here, things develop. Mm-hmm. There. Mm-hmm. You know, this, it culminated, you know, in that.
Right.
But there was a lot of planning. You know, that was really, you know, a 6-month effort.
Yeah.
Because we went over things, you know, we had people in that library there, you know, 2 days beforehand, right? Just making sure that things, you know, that, you know, they were closing, that, you know, operations were there, you know. Mm-hmm. And so we had some intel on our own.
Right.
And so it wasn't just something that happened overnight.
And that's so clear. Like, if you just look at how organized you guys were in your sort of progression of getting to this day, you can kind of tell that, like, this wasn't just a sit-in for the heck of it.
Right. And the second one was when we handed out these demands. These, what, 13 demands or something like that?
Yep. This is the letter in response to Ferguson's response. The 13 demands were on that first...
Oh, this one when people wrote?
Yes.
And signed their names.
That's right.
Yes, that's right.
You probably know these names, even if you
just look at
them.
Wait, I'm going to see my name up here.
This isn't all of them, but this is a lot of them.
Okay, well, my name got to be up here. Oh, Louise Coleman, I know her. Oh, wow. Gwendolyn Hicks, yes. Let me see my name.
Is this you here?
What?
Oh, no, this is Jean.
That's Jean. Let me see Jean. Jean always had a... that was Jean. Wow, that was Jean. Yeah, okay.
Did you guys sign your names for real? Like, this is your... Yeah, most of them were real names, not the police names.
You got to see my name. We got to find my name, man. Okay.
One thing I noticed, too, you know, you see a lot more Spanish names in here. What was the...
Yes. Now, we did have a very close relationship with the Puerto Rican student movement.
Right.
And they were part of many of the things that we did. And you know, they represented, you know, things on their own, but they were very much a part of it.
And this group of people who put out the letters, was it mostly black and brown students, or was there also the solidarity group, white students?
These are mostly black students.
Okay.
There. Now, there may very well have been some others. Oh, look at Rodney. Man. Ah, there I am.
Where? Here?
That's me. I got to take this. That's me. Yes. Yes, Lord. Yes. There I am, right. Truth be told. Truth be told. Now, you know I'm still doing this. You know, did I see?
I saw the link. That? It's awesome, man.
Oh, man. I mean, and next week we're having a bigger one.
Okay.
And
wow.
We're planning a protest going back to, you know, a much larger protest in Penn State.
Yeah.
On the 27th.
Okay.
And so, you know, I may be calling you.
Sure.
Hey, Graham, you got any bail money?
I mean, what?
Who are you?
Yeah, all of a sudden I forget.
Man, look at me. Oh, wow. April 17th. That's right. That's something. April 17th, 1974. Wow. This is really historic.
What doesn't help me, though, is that you guys wrote your freaking social security numbers on all these pages. That's what this black marker is.
Oh, that's what, really?
I had to go individually and cross these out, because that's how you guys identified yourselves as students. Like, the number as a student was your social security number? Was it not that big of a deal back then?
Like, No. It wasn't that, you know, giving you social security was not that big of a deal at all.
Right.
Now, look at this. Oh, man. Wow, when you look at this, man. I write the same way.
this thrills me that
yeah,
that you're seeing yourself here and you're seeing your name here, that
This is kind of why I did this.
You got to take a picture of me here. And I'm still very much an activist as a result of
And I want to hear about, because you said you're in the biobehavioral department?
Yes.
So
yes. I'm a medical sociologist.
So what is the distinction then with this
biobehavioral? Oh, yeah. That's very different. Well, you know, Phil has changed.
Okay.
You know, enormously. And, you know, this concept of race,
right.
You know, very few people give it any serious credence. No. So that is all very much part of, you know, this. I mean, I've written about the race concept. I do work on smoking, and you know, a lot of work internationally, particularly in France. I'm going back there next in April. I'm on sabbatical now.
Great.
Yeah. So and a lot of work on African Americans and smoking and doing some stuff on COVID and stuff now and as well. But I'm in, you know, I've been there for 25 years.
Okay.
There, but I was, you know, prior to that, I was a prof for 10 years at the health center.
Right.
Now there.
So that discipline that itself was not necessarily under attack. It was more the research within biobehavioral.
Yes.
That was.
Yes. And that, you know, also changed. But, you know, Ginsberg and Laughlin, you know, they were pushing, you know, the whole.
Race science.
Right. Race science, you know, that Jensen approach, you know, to intelligence and so forth and so on, and that petered out in anthropology. Anthropology has had some tricky roads to travel, and I don't know if it was John Pelto or what have you, but that was P-E-L-T-O.
Okay.
And he's a professor here, you know, there, and he was one of our advocates. He was also very, he was also involved with Carr. No, it's well.
Yep.
And
Rufus wife, Blanchard was also one of these faculty that ran Carr, or he was like the chapter head. Does that name ring a bell? Sociology professor
Blanchard. Yeah. No, not that I recall.
Okay.
But you know, there were, you know, others who were, you know, very much a part of, you know the entire movement. But 50 years ago, wow. I'm actually considering writing you know, I do a lot of editorial writing.
Okay.
And I'm thinking of writing an editorial to submit to the Harper Current. Yeah, this is how we respond to Ferguson's platitudes.
Oh, God. Yes. Ferguson won't talk, calls in troops.
Yes, yes, yes.
How many tomorrow?
Now, this is why, in support of the Puerto Rican student movement, right? And this is how we collaborated with the white student organizations there. And they were very supportive in terms of rallies, in terms of things, you know, along those lines. Yes, absolutely.
I mean, in my mind...
I'm very glad that you... What inspired you to focus on this?
So these photographs are part of, like... So we have a lot of documentation about the 1968-69
right.
Anti-Vietnam War,
right.
SDS rallies.
Right.
When that stuff is happening, like, every day.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
And that's very much a white student movement.
Well, it was a war.
Totally. It affected everybody.
Yeah, well, that was a war, right. And people and students didn't want to go to war.
Right.
Yeah.
But the
yeah.
population of black students at that time...
Very small.
So small,
yes.
Relative to this period.
Yes.
And this is, by all accounts, kind of like in our archives anyways,
yes.
that high watermark
yes.
of organizing,
yes.
of direct action...
Yes. Yes.
Representation
yes.
of students within yes. the general body of, other than sports.
Absolutely. Right.
You know,
right.
here's
right.
like
right.
the students voicing their demands
yes.
for
yes.
black
yes.
students and
yes.
students.
And we had a lot of, we had athletes from the football team and the basketball team. And I know Earl Wilson was one of them. Cal Chapman, he was also one of them.
Okay.
And then there was another person, but they left. When the police, they did not want to get arrested,
right.
and but they were there. They came in there and they stayed.
There's a picture of them right here. If that jogs,
that, that's where that's Connecticut. That's Cal. There's the 44, Cal Chapman. Oh, that guy 41. He was a star as well.
Right.
Where's Earl? I think that may be Earl 30. No, that's John Thomas.
He's next to the coach, I think.
Oh, yeah, no, here, that's right. Cal Chapman, John Thomas,
Earl Wilson. Where's Earl? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Al was in my class. Al was a star, but you know he wasn't part of this.
Okay.
And D. Rowe, yes. Yeah.
So this is the year
John Thomas
that he fielded the first all-black team at one time, at least in New England college basketball.
Really? Wow. Well, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, and D. Rowe. Yeah, I remember D. Rowe, but yeah, I didn't realize that was the first time.
Apparently. Did you overlap with Jim much?
Yes.
Okay.
I did overlap with him for the first year or two, and then he...
Because I think
Jim Lyons was there all the time.
73 is where I have him coming on, and where? Lyons going out.
Where?
1973, when Simons came to the
yes.
Cultural Center.
Yeah. He came out, but he was good. He became went ahead and became president of a couple of universities, but and he's still, you know, I think he's in Maryland or someplace mm-hmm. now. But he was not Doc Simons.
Right.
Now Doc Simons was someone very special.
Okay.
There. Wow. And
you remember these
oh,
folks?
Yeah.
These
oh yeah.
Two?
Okay. Of course, Rodney.
Yep.
Carlton Montgomery. You know, they're from Hartford. Gary Mina. The time too when it was both the Puerto Rican students,
right.
Now and but we had others, yeah. But the Daly campus, you know, would have taken
most of the
photos. Because you know I was a photographer.
Really?
For the Daly campus.
Really?
Yeah. I was a photographer for the Daly campus. My sophomore, I got in photography freshman sophomore year.
Okay.
There and I took some of the pictures. Wow, I need to spend.
I was going to ask, where's those negatives, Gary?
how did we work that back then? We developed them. They paid us for picture, but that was our own. You know, I think we had to give them the negatives that. They published.
Right, for print, yep.
Yeah, that they published.
Okay.
But if you go back, have you looked through the Daly campus?
Just the issues. I mean, we don't have any of their archives proper. Like,
really?
We wouldn't have negatives from the Daly campus.
Right, but did they have all the issues back then?
Yep, we got them all. They're all digitized if you want to look at
really?
Them. Yeah.
I'll send me that because
totally.
I was writing editorials back then.
Okay.
Yeah, there.
Okay.
Yeah, I was writing editorials back then. As well. But wow, that was something, man. Yeah, here are our demands.
The black student of the University of Connecticut encloses a copy of our demands. Dr. Glenn Ferguson from the black students at UConn.
This one over here too is interesting because it's sort of like that. It is written by, or signed, the black community, broadly. So this is basically the...
Okay, let me take a look.
This one is...
This is 26, right.
Well, this, though, is the statement, yeah, April 26th, and it's basically saying, you know, drop all charges.
Yes.
We're deplored.
This is what, right.
So
this
who do you think broadly would be writing something like this? The black community broadly is this faculty... So he's saying, drop the charges against us.
Yes.
Okay.
But the black community generally.
Yeah.
But that also included faculty and administrators. We met with black faculty.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, we met with black, you know, black and black administrators.
Okay.
And there were two. Dr. Simons was one. There was another one.
The guy who ran the Black Studies Institute?
No, he was an administrator.
Fred, okay.
What was that?
Floyd Bass?
Oh. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a different character. But there was also Fred Adams.
Dr. Fred Adams.
Dr. Fred Adams.
Yes.
Right. And there. He actually became commissioner of the Department of Health, Fred Adams.
Yep.
But he was a top administrator. He wasn't as trustworthy as as Fred.
Yeah.
As Dr. Simon.
Right.
And there. We had very little to do with Bass.
And the whole institute, this Black Studies, the
yes.
Center for Black
yeah.
Studies?
Yeah. Very, very little to do. He benefited more from us than we did from him.
Interesting.
To be quite honest. But he was not someone that we would have reason to favor.
Okay.
Or someone would go to him and say, hey, you know, this
you know, this is a, an issue.
Yeah, how did you find out about this show?
A colleague, a very good friend, Reginald Beeman, who was 1 year ahead.
Okay, I know Reggie.
You know Reggie?
This is how. Okay.
Okay, all right. Reggie was 1 year ahead.
Yeah.
While we were in the library, Reggie and I went to school together, high school.
In Waterbury?
Yeah, in Waterbury.
Okay.
So Reggie, when we were in the library, I called Reggie. I said, Reg, we're in the library. You know, we're not leaving. We're sitting in. He said, good, you know, there, you know, this is what, you know, you might want to do or something.
Had he already left or graduated?
He had graduated.
And he was maybe not doing the inter-college, because I know he was doing that for a time.
Very much in inter-college. He might have stayed around here for a little while, then he went to went back to Waterbury. So Reggie sent me this and everything, and he said, hey, you need to know about this.
Yes.
And so I said, yeah, well, cool. I mean, you know, I'd like to, you know.
Good.
No, this is a wow, Graham. You really did a spectacular job here.
Thank you so much.
I very 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 much appreciate it.
Hey, got to pay back. Revenge.
You've been listening to 91.7 WHUS Stores. This was another episode of Darshiv, bringing you voices from the 1974 Black Student Sit-In. My guest today, Gary King. Thanks as always to Arable Lands for the intro-outro music, and to Melika Stennett for graphic design. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.